from deep inside your radio.
First on this broadcast, an item from contributed by a listener to the Buried Lead Department. This was a story in the Washington Post, basically about the appeal of a rating of a motion picture, the motion picture documentary about American soldiers in Iraq. That's the ostensible story in this story. However, way down, you have to put your miner's helmet on to find this little nugget. Quoting now, Andy Robbins, the head of theatrical marketing for Palm Pictures. I just have to interrupt that for a moment. As in, cross my palm pictures? No, please. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the movie business. Getting back to the quote, Andy Robbins, the head of theatrical marketing for Palm Pictures, the film's distributor, said he argued to the ratings board, apparently, that the U.S. military has, quote, unrestricted access to America's teenagers for recruitment purposes. Robbins, continuing with the article, said that a part of the Bush administration's No Child Left Behind Act makes federal funding for schools contingent upon military recruiters having access to students' addresses and phone numbers. Rip out the front page, would you, please? Wow, who knew that? Repeating, this is an allegation by Andy Robbins, head of theatrical marketing for Palm. Now, you know, no reason why he should be an expert on the No Child Left Behind Act, but this goes unrebutted in the article. A part of the No Child Left Behind Act makes federal funding for schools contingent upon military recruiters having access, not to the campuses, that's an argument that's 30 years old, having access to students' addresses and phone numbers. I'm in receipt of information that the Educational Testing Service may be selling student data as well without informing students or their parents. Hey, it's mining. It's data mining. Ladies and gentlemen, I repeat, copyright your life. Privacy law means nothing, but, you know, the good people at Disney have ensured that copyright law is pretty robust. Copyright your life. Then if you find people selling your data, a little settlement is in order. Now, you know, there's no end of the people on the left who find comfort in the thought that George W. Bush is not the brightest cookie in the tin. But here's what I saw this week when George W. Bush met with a man he used to call Pooty Poot, Vladimir Putin. Now he calls him Vladimir Putin, at their little summit. Was it in Bratislava? Somewhere over there. Somewhere. Slovenia, Slovakia, they're all Slows. And the question came up, as you knew it would, trying to align the two realities. One, President Bush's stirring proclamation that the United States was in the business of advancing democracies all over the world, with the recent experience of Russia, needless to say, not in that business. And Putin bristled, as a Pooty Poot will, and said, well, you know, through his translator, of course, the United States has this thing called the Electoral College, and nobody says that's not democratic. Okay, and Bush didn't correct him because of the presumed slam that, you know, the Supreme Court voted him in rather than the people. But nobody else reacted either. Now, ladies and gentlemen, do a little reading up if you care to, or just take it from me. One of the abiding mantras of the conservative movement during the middle 20th century was, America is a republic, not a democracy. Now, that was based on, first of all, fact. It was formed as a representative republic. We didn't vote for our senators. We didn't vote for our president. The whole idea was avoiding mob rule. But the other advantage to conservatives in saying that was, hey, the party they like is the Republican Party, and the party they don't like is the Democratic Party. So, yeah. Now, George W. Bush stands there while Vladimir Putin says, well, you've got an electoral college. Nobody says that's not democratic. And it doesn't occur to Bush to say, well, it occurred, it, you know, Jefferson and Madison and Hamilton. But it doesn't occur to any of the commentators, the smarties, the self-described smarties who commented on the summit to point it out either. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, when it all comes down to it, we're all dumb. Hello, welcome to the show. Including the guy who pushed that button.
just be the perfect disguise for someone who's in pain. And he works at a bar and he tells me that if he tries really hard, then he might just be a beautiful star, 'cause that's all he really needs to make him mend inside. And Kelly, you're running out of time. Kelly, you're going down in style. And swallow your pride and get on a train out of Hollywood. Look at me, I've been such a fool, thinking fame would do what only time can do, hoping I would be alright if I could have a perfect life just like you.
From the aforementioned Edge of America, from the home of the homeless, more specifically, I'm Harry Shearer, and this is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, just like the music started to say, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, good apologies this week. If I do say so myself, good crop. From jeffgannon.com. Yes. Go look at it. Don't have to trust me. Quote, despite all the pleas from the left to go over to the dark side and expose the, quote, corrupt Bush administration, quote, simply isn't going to happen. My faith and my ideology are rock solid. Still, the last few weeks have been difficult for my family and my associates. To them, I offer my apology and gratitude for their support. Unquote. This is Jeff Gannon, a.k.a. James Guckert, the former, quote, White House correspondent, unquote, for, quote, Talon News, unquote, who was also moonlighting or daylighting, depending on... Since this job with Talon News was a volunteer work, apparently, moonlighting as a male escort. He continues, in regard to the allegations about my personal life, I have been advised by my attorneys not to comment on any of the details pending the outcome of any possible legal action I might pursue. Therefore, I won't be discussing any of that stuff here. So much for JeffGannon.com, ladies and gentlemen. Won't be going back there if he's not going to. So he's going to sue, you see, presumably because they forced him out of a job that he was a volunteer at. So, estimate of damages, Your Honor? What's the round thing with a hole in it? Dateline Boise, a Senate Ethics Committee hearing at the State House has concluded. They're determining if Senator Jack Noble violated ethics by introducing a bill that would have potentially benefited him. At the end of a 2.5-hour hearing, Senator Noble acknowledged his mistake. I apologize for grief I've caused others. I ask humbly for forgiveness of the Senate, the legislature, my family, so we can now begin the process of healing, he said. The bill would have changed the law requiring liquor stores to be at least 300 feet from school property. That would have made liquor sales legal at his store, you see. Let the healing begin. And fuel it with some fine whiskey, won't you? The Rocky Mount, North Carolina man accused of robbing a bank was supposed to be in prison at the time of the holdup. We let him out by mistake, Nash County Sheriff Jimmy Grimes said this week. It was our fault. The man faces an attempted robbery charge in connection with this holdup. I would like to apologize for any misconceptions that would make it appear that the judge or district attorney didn't do their jobs, Sheriff Grimes said. I would also like to apologize on behalf of the sheriff's office for any inconvenience to the two banks. It is an inconvenience being robbed. Thank you for noticing that. Dateline Amsterdam, a pharmaceutical company which sent anonymous Valentine cards. I got this job because I know how to read. Valentine's cards to Dutch gynecologists in a publicity stunt has been forced to apologize for sparking family arguments. The doctors and their partners were furious with the company, whose website says it mixes the ingredients for health and happiness, after the firm sent cards saying, "Now shall we tell everyone?" A second card was dispatched to the 800 doctors the next day, explaining that the first had been a gimmick to promote a new product. In some cases, the cards caused so much distress that the company, Organon, sent apologetic bouquets of flowers. Yeah, that wouldn't arouse suspicion. Here's a story I've been watching for you, ladies and gentlemen. Washington, D.C. school and health officials this week apologized to parents whose children attend John Eaton Elementary School for allowing a group to spay and neuter more than 500 cats in the school cafeteria last weekend. That's right. Spay and neuter cats in the school cafeteria. And the parents were upset, I guess, on the grounds that that would make the food worse? That's the part I don't understand. This is a great idea, great people, but the wrong venue, said Peggy Keller, interim chief of the Bureau of Community Hygiene at the Washington, D.C. Department of Health. I want to deeply apologize for the error in judgment. We're deeply sorry, deeply concerned, and we apologize. There's a lot of depth to that apology. I think we might want to send a drill down there, see if there's oil. Crews spent 2 days thoroughly cleaning the cafeteria where the cat surgeries took place last weekend. It's to the point now that there is absolutely no child in jeopardy, said the chief business officer for D.C. Public Schools. Chief business officer says it's safe. Why wouldn't you trust him? Cleaning services initially were estimated at $15,000, but your cost may vary. It's just the wrong venue, having a neutering and spaying clinic in the school cafeteria. Because, you know, we're trying to keep the concept of mystery meat safe. Michael Jackson has apologized. No, not that one. General Sir Michael Jackson, the British Army's chief of staff, we've spoken of him before, he said this week, I apologize on behalf of the Army to the Iraqis who were abused and the people of Iraq as a whole. This was after three members of the British Armed Forces were convicted of, let's call it Abu Ghraib-type abuse. There are about 50 more in the pipeline. Britain has so many fewer soldiers than we do over there. They must be evil. They must be pure evil. A senior officer, says Jackson, has been appointed to analyze what lessons need to be learned from the case and other pending courts-martial and civil prosecutions. The general acknowledged that the camp breadbasket commander, Major Taylor, had broken the Geneva Convention by ordering that the looters who were arrested be worked hard, apparently against the Geneva Convention. Isn't that quaint? But this was, he said, not a grave breach. Major Taylor has not been dealt with. The Brooklyn, New York teacher who sent an American soldier demoralizing letters written by sixth graders apologized this week and admitted blame. In a statement issued by the New York Department of Education, social studies teacher Alex Kunhart said he regretted offending PFC Rob Jacobs. He didn't say whether he either coached the students or read their missives before mailing them. The missives accused soldiers of committing atrocities in Iraq. The Department of Education, which is sending an apology to Jacobs and his family, declined comment. It was never my intention to demean or insult anyone, said Kunhart, who was spotted outside his Park Slope, Brooklyn home this week. I never meant for the words of my students to hurt any of our troops. The responsibility for this action is mine alone, and I apologize. Kunhart mailed letters to Jacobs last month written by 21 of his sixth graders for an assignment. Nearly half of them derided President Bush or the Iraq War and accused soldiers of crimes such as killing civilians and destroying mosques. Even some of those that praised soldiers for their bravery were filled with divisive political rhetoric and ominous predictions. It's democracy, ladies and gentlemen. Democracy, the kind that Vladimir Putin should look into. Theater workers at Lowe's Danbury, Connecticut theaters gave moviegoers three-chapter excerpts from two of a romantic suspense author's latest titles, Killing Kelly and Dead on the Dance Floor. The books, written for adults, are part of a nationwide promotion between Mira Books, a division of Harlequin, and Lowe's. The books are targeted to women. Her Danbury resident said her six-year-old son was given a copy of the book, so were four of her friend's children between the ages of 5 and 11. The book contains numerous curse words, sexual material, and violence. They were upset. A spokesman for Lowe's, John McCauley, said the local staff was instructed to only give the books out to women. In this particular case, we apologize if there was someone that received the book if they weren't supposed to receive the book. Many moviegoers were puzzled by the concept. It's a little weird, said one. You go to a movie and they give you a book? Paris Hilton had her sidekick email companion-type wireless device hacked, and phone numbers of Paris Hilton, you've heard of her. She's heiress, famous for being famous. People were morning jocks. This is how fun morning jocks are. Started calling the numbers to try to talk to celebrities. That's always a good bit. I don't know why this stuff always happens to me, but I wish it wouldn't anymore, Paris Hilton said, told Us Weekly. This always happens to her, unlike inappropriate fame. I want to apologize to all my friends and family, Hilton told Us Magazine. Most of all, she feels horrible that once again someone has invaded my privacy. Yeah, I think, ladies and gentlemen, we can all agree. Let's all work together to get a lot more privacy for Paris Hilton. A lot more. I mean total privacy for Paris Hilton. What do you say? Can we work on that together? Right after you're through copywriting your life, let's join up, okay? And finally, West Warwick, Rhode Island Town Council President Jean-Marie DeMasi, and there's a blending of cultures, issued a statement this week saying she is sorry for failing to pay municipal property taxes on her home and vehicles for several years. President of the Town Council, ladies and gentlemen, failed to pay property taxes. I would like to apologize to the citizens of West Warwick and assure them that I believe I should be subjected to a higher standard due to my position on the Town Council and will try to live by those standards in the future, she said in the statement. She did not answer how she could register her car without her vehicle taxes being current. For years, she didn't answer that question, but she acknowledged for the first time she received tax bills, as well as notices from a lawyer trying to collect the debts on behalf of the town. "I regret not following through on this very important matter," she said. Not deep regret, though. Not deep enough, maybe. I don't know. You be the judge, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies of the week. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News of the digital wonderland for your listening pleasure. A U.S. appeals court this week said that federal regulators had overstepped their authority by imposing a rule designed to limit the copying of digital television programs. "You crossed the line," Judge Harry Edwards told a lawyer for the Federal Communications Commission. "Selling televisions is not what the FCC is in the business of," Edwards said. Siding with critics who charge the rule dictates how computers and other devices would work. The FCC mandated that beginning this summer, all devices capable of displaying a television picture, like your computer, needed to be compliant with a broadcast flag, which would allow content owners to say, "Uh-uh, you can't copy this." The threat, of course, being that content owners would say, "If we don't get it, if we don't get that protection, we won't give our high-value material, our Oscar-winning high-value material, to digital television." And yes, would be like the tree falling in the forest when no one notices. All 300,000 of the people who can actually see digital television, among which is me, for other reasons. But you know, I wouldn't bitch. Ladies and gentlemen, the Michael Jackson jury has been selected, as you may know. Are you following that? I'll follow it for you. Don't worry about it. And very, very much more rapidly than experts, I guess jury selection experts, had predicted the jury would be selected. The question, of course, involved whether they had followed Michael Jackson's previous allegations previously of his interest in children, and whether they were familiar with any of the celebrities on the witness list for the trial. One of the jurors had been asked during selection if he recognized celebrity witnesses in the case, including Deepak Chopra, the author and self-help guru. The juror said, "I think he's a rapper." First impulse is to say, it's pathetically ill-informed. But you know, maybe he's right.
Yo, testifying in the trial of Mickey J. I'm Deepak, mystifying your day, getting you spiritualized through spiritualize and sending it all to your cellular phone. I'm waiting, not hating, mega meditating. I'm with you right now, and I'm all alone. That's a paradox, like timeless clocks, like egg-laying cocks, if you know what I mean. I tune out the mental static, I'm the mind's Vegematic, and you'll always find me at the hip scene. So serene at the scene, as if my mind's just a screen, and I'm its projector. Caveat lector, and there is no keener specter than a mountain of green. Got a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Got a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Down at La Costa, you can come see me. Nothing seamy or unseemly, just gentle yoga and sashimi. Golf and tennis and hints of a gangster past. Now the place is less exciting than a Lutheran fast. I practice perfect health and I offer perfect weight. Tell your mind to say it and your body will follow. Visualize yourself as hollow, that will be six pills. But think of all the money I've saved you on pills. Got a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Got a lot Hunt of Hunts for Natural Serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Canada. That's just a service. It's not a public service, and it's not a copyrighted feature. It's just news of Canada. Dateline Ottawa, the office that created the Stanley Cup, believes it should still be awarded in 2005, no matter what the National Hockey League says. National Hockey League, of course, not having a season this year. The Stanley Cup is important to Canadians, Governor General Adrienne Clarkson told a Toronto newspaper this week. Governor General, for those of you not up on the Canadian system, is the Queen's representative. That's right. Canadians have a queen, ladies and gentlemen. They bow down to her in private. It's so much more than just a sports trophy. It's a symbol of our great love of hockey, said Governor General Clarkson. She sees the Stanley Cup, emblematic of hockey supremacy, on tour this summer to players' hometowns across Canada. The dramatic difference would be in the players carrying the cup down their various main streets. Their names would be the likes of Kim St-Pierre and Danielle Goyette, Cassie Campbell and Jaina Hefford, Sammy Joe Small and Jennifer Botterill. Names that might be etched onto the trophy alongside or LeFleur, Howe, and Gretzky. Why not, says Miss Clarkson, women's hockey has come along so far in the last few years. She sees a showdown for the cup between the Canadian and U.S. women's national teams as a one-time-only opportunity that should not be missed. It would delight hockey-starved Canadians, she believes. 6 million of whom tuned in 3 years ago to watch the Canadian women defeat the United States for the gold in Salt Lake City. Governor General back in 1892 was Lord Stanley. Yes, that's why it's called the Stanley Cup. Canadians, she said, would miss it if the Stanley Cup were not given to honor excellence in hockey. So let's give it to the women, she says. You see. Just because the men aren't playing. Canada, also news of Canada, the Canadian government has refused to take part in a planned United States missile defense system despite personal lobbying by President Bush. United States diplomatic officials revealed that this week. The long-awaited decision from Prime Minister Paul Martin was a symbolic setback for the Bush administration, which is trying to heal rifts with allies that emerged after the Iraq deal. And here's the United States rift-healing reaction. Canada has relinquished sovereignty over its airspace, according to the United States. That was the announcement from the United States government. From now on, the United States government will control any decision to fire at incoming missiles over Canadian territory, declared the U.S. ambassador to Canada, Paul Cellucci. We will deploy. We will defend North America. We simply cannot understand why Canada would, in effect, give up its sovereignty to decide what to do about a missile threat that might be coming towards Canada. That's a rift healer right there. Or a heel rifter. Canada has given up its sovereignty. Now, there are those of us, of course, thought that Canadian sovereignty was sort of halfway between Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, but in any case, they've given it up. According to us, healing rifts wherever we go. Ladies and gentlemen, now news of more interesting countries. How about our old friend Pakistan? What are they up to? What have they been up to? What have they been up to in the March toward democracy. International investigators have uncovered evidence of a secret meeting 18 years ago between Iranian officials, ladies and gentlemen, the new enemy, and associates of Pakistani scientists. There's that guy again, Abdul Qadir Khan, AQ Khan, that resulted in a written offer to supply Tehran with the makings of a nuclear weapons program. This is in Sunday's Washington Post. The meeting, believed to have taken place in a dusty Dubai office in 1987, kick-started Tehran's nuclear efforts and Khan's black market. Iran, which was at war with Iraq then, bought centrifuge designs and a starter kit for uranium enrichment. Tehran recently told the IAEA that it turned down the chance to buy the more sensitive equipment required for building the core of a bomb. But there is evidence Iran used the offer as a buyer's guide, acquiring some of the pricier items elsewhere. Mr. A.Q. Khan, ladies and gentlemen. And, according to the Los Angeles dog trainer this week, the United States knew about A.Q. Khan's operation and waited to shut it down. Nuclear warhead plans the Pakistani scientist Khan sold to Libya were more complete and detailed than previously disclosed, raising new concerns about the cost of Washington's wait-and-watch policy before Khan and his global black market were shut down last year. Two Western nuclear weapons specialists who've examined the top-secret design say the hundreds of pages of engineering drawings and handwritten notes provide an excellent starting point for anyone trying to develop an effective atomic warhead. The sale of the plans is particularly troubling to some investigators because the transaction occurred at least 18 months after U.S. and British intelligence agencies concluded Khan was running an international nuclear smuggling ring and identified Libya as a suspected customer. But we waited. Waited, you know, just for the... It's timing, ladies and gentlemen. It's like comedy. Shiite Muslim assassins are killing former members of Saddam Hussein's mostly Sunni Muslim regime with impunity in a wave of violence that, combined with the ongoing Sunni insurgency, threatens to escalate into civil war. The war between Shiite vigilantes and former Ba'ath Party members is seldom investigated and largely overshadowed by the insurgency. This according to Knight Ridder newspapers. The killings have intensified since the electoral victory of the Shiites, and U.S. and Iraqi officials worry they could imperil progress toward a unified Iraq. It's the beginning, and we could go down the slippery slope very quickly, said a spokesman for the Iraqi Interior Ministry. We've been so concerned with removing terrorists that this other situation has reared its ugly head. Both sides are sharpening their knives. Hey, My knives could use some sharpening. That's a good idea. That's a good thing. Ladies and gentlemen, the transfer of Richard Nixon's papers and tapes to his presidential library in Yorba Linda may be delayed until 2007. President Bush's budget did not include the money for it. A recent change in the law allowed the Nixon archives to leave Washington for the first time since Watergate. The Richard Nixon Library and Birthplace hoped to begin receiving the material later this year, but the National Archives' budget request of nearly $3 million to pay for the move was unmet in Bush's budget request to Congress. It's going to be very difficult to move things around and make do without it, said the acting assistant archivist for presidential libraries, Sharon Fawcett. The Nixon Library is the only presidential library to operate without federal funding and a National Archives collection, all because Congress was fearful Nixon would destroy materials needed for Watergate, so it passed a law after he resigned giving the government possession of his papers and tapes. But just a year ago, the law was changed, allowing the archives to move. Now all they need is the money. I have no comment, but reportedly there is some comment on this matter, among others, on this recently arrived self-recorded tape of Nixon in heaven.
So, I just got word that the papers won't be moving out to...
Get away from my window! Go on! Get out of here!
Problem?
It's just a Thompson guy.
Thompson?
Yeah, the new fella, the commie writer that just waltzed in. Come on out, Nixon!
Oh, go away!
Let's play some shotgun golf, just you and me and one of your German henchmen.
Maybe we could close that window.
Haldeman, you've been in this place almost as long as I have. You know their attitude. This is the big heaven. You know, why would you ever need to touch a climate control infrastructure, for God's sakes?
No, you're right.
It's like, they never once asked themselves, all right, now we've got this, open-air kind of architecture.
Mm-hmm.
How do we shut out intrusive noises? Yeah. I mean... That's where your window...
Come on, Nixon, I've been waiting for this!
Just go away! Go find Jerry Garcia!
Yeah, that is their attitude.
That got him. Always could read the radicals like a book. Mm.
Surprise you that he got in?
Thompson? Oh, no. Don't forget, these radicals all have their very liberal friends in very high places,
mm-hmm,
you see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even here?
Oh, especially here.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right.
I mean, this place is worse in that regard than the New York Times or
CBS News.
That's right. There you go. Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Might have thought twice about coming up here if we'd known that,
Oh, sure. But you don't.
No.
You never know.
No.
I mean, that's the way they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and of course, they're right. They run the universe and such.
We do have this matter of the papers and things not being moved to the library.
Oh, no. They'll never let Nixon's materials go to Nixon's library.
Mm-hmm.
See, that would be a concession to old man Nixon. I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's right there.
That's part of it.
What's the other part?
The real part?
Yep.
The president zeroed out the budget for it.
He did what now?
Zeroed it out.
In the budget.
That's right.
Bush did.
Yep. Of course, it's just budget. It has to be approved.
I know the way the process works, Haldeman.
No, I know you do.
All right. But never forget, sometimes these people put something in the budget and it actually goes through, see, just because it goes against expectations. That's the way they play the game, so...
No, I know, but the archives sent the shipping boxes back to Home Depot, and that's...
Well, what the hell kind of damn conservative does Mr. George Walker Bush consider himself to be?
Mm-hmm.
If he's going to go along with the Keep Nixon's Materials in Washington crowd?
Yeah, well, he is more conservative than his dad.
His dad, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Eldridge Cleaver was more conservative than his dad.
Well,
remember him? Yeah. Black guy with the funny trousers.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's your Black History Month featurette right there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But you never seen that.
No. Best-selling author, before you know it.
That's right. That's
selling
right.
Pants with leather cod pieces.
That's right. Is that what those are called?
I think so.
No, you won't see that.
Mm.
But, no, as far as Bush's dad is concerned, just two words.
Yeah.
Rockefeller wing.
That's right. Extreme end.
Yep. Leader of the extreme end of the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd expect him to zero us out, but not the kid.
Yeah. He's got the war to pay for.
Well, Christ almighty, the cost of moving every damn memo and every damn reel of tape to your Belinda airmail special delivery would just about pay for 1 hour in the wreck. I mean,
yeah, suppose that's right.
You know, I mean, what's that going to accomplish?
Maybe it's a very important hour.
You see, this is what I mean about the lawyers always saying we shouldn't be conducting too many operations from up here.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand their concern. I think they're... Yeah, there may be a good conduct clause or something that binds us, and...
Well, I mean, you know, who's the last person you heard of getting kicked out of here? Is it? Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's a paper tiger.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you see, little crappers like George W. Bush forget about you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they forget about the solemn principle that every president's materials belong in his own library. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, of course, that's the thing.
That is the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm not going to get rich from it.
No, no.
Never have, never will. So, I mean, not what else?
No, I mean, not what you were in it for.
No, no, not what I was in it for. Mm-hmm. We used to talk a lot about firebombing that liberal think tank.
Brookings?
That's the one, yeah. Yep, yep.
Yeah, sure, when there was a... clear and present danger that they possessed information that we needed.
That's right. But also, just as you know, just as a way of getting our attention.
No, I know, but we never...
What about a little operation at the National Archives? You know, Lydia's bored to tears with the radio stuff. He'd just love to get back in the saddle and do something real.
Just don't think it's...
The kids of the Cubans are available, I know that.
No, I've seen that too, so... That's no problem.
Nope, nope.
Just think it might be premature.
Premature?
Mm-hmm.
You think it's premature that 30 years later, my papers, my tapes, still aren't under the control of people I trust? I mean, is that your idea of premature?
No, just think we should give the budget process a little chance to play itself out.
You do? Yes.
Yes, I think there's a... very good chance that this particular project can just kind of walk itself back into a buried line item shortly after midnight, just before a vote.
You know, I suppose there's always a chance.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, even with people we don't trust in charge of the materials, there's a huge source of protection for us.
Which is?
Which is nobody cares anymore.
Hey, Nixon!
Except him.
Go away! All right. Back burner, then?
Yep. Yep. For now.
Okay. Let's go get ourselves some cottage cheese. I went over there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They said only small curd, I see. You know, what kind of heaven do you think people think you're running here, you know? But par for the course, yes.
I could never relent.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to read the trades for you. Calm down. This is from Adweek. About a story I tipped you off to a week or so ago about the people who were on trial for overbilling the Office of Drug Control. I'll read it for you. This is your brain on overbilling. Dateline New York, former Ogilvy and Mather executives Shauna Seifert and Thomas Early were found guilty this week of plotting to overbill the government's $1 billion Office of National Drug Control Policy account to cover a $3 million revenue shortfall on the business. Seifert and Early were found guilty in all 10 counts against them, one for conspiring to defraud the government, the rest for filing false claims. The pair had pled not guilty. Seifert, a former executive group director at Ogilvy, an ad agency, put her head in her hands as the guilty verdicts were read for each of the counts. Early, the shop's former financial director, sat impassively. The prosecution requested that Seifert be fitted with an electronic monitoring device until sentencing because she is a foreign national. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. A foreign national was working the president's White House Office of Drug Control Policy account. Call Jeff Gannon and ask him about this, will you? Her attorney, Greg Craig, last seen defending President Clinton during the impeachment, he leapt up saying such a move was unnecessary because Seifert was a, quote, model participant throughout the process. The judge agreed. I don't think we need to go to electronic monitoring. By then, Seifert's husband, pale and shaken by the verdict, had joined her at the defense table. They sat huddled, arm in arm. Seifert and Early could each receive up to 5 years in prison. During testimony in court last week, both Seifert and Early insisted they did not ask Ogilvy employees to doctor timesheets to fraudulently increase the number of hours billed to the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Early did concede that some timesheets appeared to contain inaccuracies. Ogilvy issued this statement. Many of the events described during the trial are completely inconsistent with Ogilvy's core values. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. An advertising agency has core values. What will they think of next when I read the trades for you? Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Careless, believe me, you know what I mean. I could care less, forget it, give me a break. Who knew? Let me tell you, go figure. Whatever works, have a nice day. Chill out, not to worry, no problemo. So why get bent out of shape? Like, hey, no way. Yo, lighten up, let's face it. Like I give a hoot. Straight ahead, take it easy, be cool. Continued success. Like brutal. Like blunt. Like really, totally upfront. The bottom line is, I could care less. The bottom line is, I could care less.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show from the show business capital of the world, Santa Monica, California. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, on channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available now as a free download at audible.com/theshow, and available around the world on your computer at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived. And it would be just like if Deepak Chopra really were a rapper, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Canadian, and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. Think of it as the home of the homeless.